it's just one example of what can happen. I mean, I think we all have experienced in our lives things that have failed that weren't supposed to. But with this, we're talking about a chemical that's designed to kill all life. These frontline sterilization technicians are potentially sticking their head in that sterilizer multiple times a day. That's why we're so concerned, and there's so much data to back that up, that it could cause irreparable harm.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes, leaders, and innovators who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with David Hilliker, President and CEO of ChemDAC, Inc. ChemDAC, Inc. is the leading manufacturer of gas detection systems for low-temperature gas and liquid chemical sterilants in the healthcare industry. Mr. Hilliker has over 25 years' experience in regulatory compliance and the design and development of state-of-the-art technologies to ensure workplace safety. Mr. Hilliker is a member of ISHM, AIMI, and the American Industrial Hygiene Association, or AIHA. Bob, we've spoken with David in the past. We always see him at the ISHM Annual Conference and Expo, and he's a big champion for employee or worker safety, and not just in the healthcare industry, although that's obviously the reason that we have him on our show.
Yeah, he's such a wealth of knowledge with this topic. I just can't wait to hear the additional nuggets that he's going to share with us to help us understand how important it is to monitor these chemicals in the sterile processing department.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and to directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is David Hilliker, President and CEO of ChemDAC, Inc. And David, you've been on the show before, but it's been quite some time. Really excited to have you back on today.
Hey, thank you, Justin. I'm happy to be with you tonight. You know, it's been, what do you say, it's been 2 years?
At least a year and a half. It's been a while because you were early in season one, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's been a tremendous amount of activity in that time. I mean, I think the awareness of the safety risk associated with chemical sterilants, both gas sterilants and liquid chemical sterilants, is really becoming much more apparent. But I think there's still a long way to go.
Well, I think you remember we definitely got behind this and felt like it was an important conversation. I know I mentioned it to a number of my colleagues in the industry, and I know adoption wasn't really where we wanted it to be, but I think it's great to set the table in a conversation like this and really tell the audience why they should care about monitoring low temp and liquid chemical sterilants in their facilities today.
Well, it's obviously a great question, and it's a central question for ChemDAC and our whole company. We realized early on with ethylene oxide that there was such a potential for harm way back in the 80s. And as that evolved, we took it upon ourselves to develop the best technology. There was really nothing else out there at the time that could accurately detect ethylene oxide. And now, 40 years later, for crying out loud, there's been big changes in the industry. A lot of the ethylene oxide, it's been replaced by a new sterilant, and it's not even that new now, right? Hydrogen peroxide's been around for quite some time. You know, we've seen this movie before. We're looking at the same evolution of why we should be concerned about monitoring now this new chemical. So the issue is that all of these chemicals are designed to kill all life. And in fact, the most difficult to destroy, you know, spores and things like that. So these chemicals have to be very, very toxic and very, very effective and efficient at killing microorganisms. So at the end of the day, if they're designed to kill all life, you know, it's just not a healthy environment to be in if you don't know if any of that fugitive gas is escaping from any kind of sterilization equipment.
Yeah, that's a really good point, David. It's interesting to me that ETO used to be the gold standard and was used in most hospitals. So how does ETO compare now with other chemical sterilants from a worker safety perspective?
Well, Bob, let me tell you, the interesting thing to me is that there's government agencies, as you know, NIOSH, National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, and OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And a lot of people don't understand what those agencies really are all about. You know, NIOSH is tasked with doing the research and coming up with occupational exposure limits. And OSHA is tasked with enforcing those exposure limits. The problem is that they put a lot of time and effort, a lot of scientists and a lot of studies and everything to come up with exposure limits. And if you're not monitoring, you have no way of knowing whether you're below or above those exposure limits. Exposure limits, by the way, that are indicative of above which are considered to be unsafe. So when you think about ethylene oxide, you're right, it was the gold standard for 50 years. It was only in the last decade or so that it became more studied and realized that it went from an animal carcinogen to a human carcinogen. Well, guess where hydrogen peroxide is right now? It's an animal carcinogen. And you asked about the exposure limits to compare the two gas chemicals. By the way, a lot of people don't realize that hydrogen peroxide is also a gas, and it's a much, much higher concentration than you might be aware of. So when you compare the two from an occupational safety and health standpoint, from an occupational exposure limit standpoint, they actually have the exact same exposure limit, ethylene oxide and hydrogen peroxide. Where they differ is in what's called the immediately dangerous to life and health level, the IDLH. The IDLH for ethylene oxide is 700-800 parts per million, is immediately dangerous to life and health. For hydrogen peroxide, it's 75. So it's a magnitude of 10 times lower. When people think about hydrogen peroxide, unfortunately, I think what comes to mind is the stuff that you can buy at the grocery store that you pour on a cut and it bubbles, or women dye their hair with it. So, you know, how bad can this be? Well, that's 3%. What's used in the sterilizers to kill microorganisms, it starts out at somewhere around 50, 58%, but during the cycle, it actually climbs to almost 95% concentration. And at that level, it's what's called a monopropellant. It's rocket fuel.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to me when I hear you talk about that. It's something that I've always wondered about. And I personally had experiences where I was doing something on the inside of the chamber and felt burning on my hands or my arms. Usually I'd have gloves on, but if I brushed my arm against the internal chamber, it almost felt like fiberglass type of burning in my arm. And I've heard that story repeated to me over and over and over again from other customers and other people using it. But then I wonder, hearing this IDLH level and how it's actually more stringent than ETO, how is it that the bodies that be who govern this out there are not bringing it up and making it be monitored in the same way that ETO is being monitored?
And I can answer that in a couple of different ways. ChemDAC, we're very much a leader in monitoring hydrogen peroxide in the food and beverage industry as well. And interestingly enough, in that industry, it is very much monitored. The awareness is very much there. And I think the answer is that when you say the agencies, the powers that be, OSHA seems to give healthcare a pass. They expect them to self-police. And this has been very apparent because ChemDAC is very closely involved in regulatory rulemaking and the development and evolution of exposure limits. We go to all the meetings. In fact, right now, not to switch over to another chemical, but parasitic acid is in the regulatory phase right now of creating new or promulgating new occupational exposure limits, and they're quite low. But again, going back to hydrogen peroxide, it's a matter of awareness and education. Your question about the agencies, they go into other industries quite often, but they're stretched so thin that when you have industries like poultry processing where people are losing limbs, and construction and agriculture where they're using big equipment and everything else, and bodily harm is more from getting, you know, sucked into a machine or something like that, they just don't have the resources. And they've basically explained that to us repeatedly over the years. And it's unfortunate. And so what has to happen is that folks need to be educated, and they need to really to protect themselves. You know, there's just a tremendous amount of information out there, and my hat's off to Beyond Clean because some of the content that they've been putting together, that you've been putting together for the benefit of these folks, the frontline technicians, is fantastic. They have access now to educational material and continuing education credits for learning about the agencies, about the exposure limits, and so on and so forth.
So that's really a great point, David. I love hearing that. It makes me wonder why we don't have more rigorous testing in the low temperature sterilization field. We know that this stuff is challenging and it potentially can cause harm, but it just seems to be getting overlooked.
You know, I'm in the same camp. We've been focused on these chemical sterilants for decades. And again, I think I said earlier, we've evolved with the evolution of new chemical sterilants, both in the gaseous phase and in the liquid chemical sterilants or, you know, high-level disinfectants. But they have an effect. The fugitive gases leaking from this equipment can have a very detrimental effect on health over time. And, you know, Bob, there's been multiple studies, peer-reviewed articles, and everything that really show that this, in fact, is a real issue. It's a real problem. But, you know, some of these chemicals, you can't, they're imperceptible to the senses, right? You can't see, smell, or taste them. So how do you know? That's really the issue with some of the chemicals. Ethylene oxide, hydrogen peroxide, you know, there's no odor, right? There's an odor threshold, but it's hundreds of parts per million. And I use parts per million. I use PPM. That's one of the things that people, that there's so many acronyms in the regulatory kind of genre and then the healthcare industry. You put them together and it's quite an alphabet soup of acronyms. They need to understand what a PPM is. How little that is really what they need to understand. It's just a minute amount. And when you think about that, escaping, it's nothing. And so your question, why is there not more rigid testing? That's by design, quite frankly. And I'm not going to disparage, I don't want to disparage any manufacturer of sterilization equipment, because I know that they design and build this equipment to the highest standards. But anything can fail, and there's unintended consequences of every design or everything that you just don't know. In fact, I can give you an example. There's an FDA database called the MOD, that stands for Manufacturer and User Facility Device Experience. It's an FDA website that is basically where you can complain if there's been an issue with a piece of medical equipment. Same thing stands for sterilizers. Over the years, there's been thousands of people who have complained of respiratory issues or, as you mentioned earlier, Bob, burns or something that caused harm when they were working with this equipment. So the MOD database is just one indication that this equipment can and sometimes does leak. A lot of us are familiar with the 510K process, where you get certified to sell products into the healthcare market. That's a process by which the manufacturers have to go through a rigid process to get their product approved to sell into healthcare. Well, part of that, not a big part of it, but a little part of it is safe and effective, okay? Typically, they're talking about the patient now, not the worker, which is the first problem. The second problem is that they will accept the company's testing, in this case, exposure testing, on a brand new sterilizer with two cycles on it, and they test for leaks. And then they say, hey, it doesn't leak over the permissible exposure limit, so let's go ahead and clear it for sale. Well, that's great in a lab setting, but what about when you have 1,000 cycles on it or 5,000 cycles on it? The example I was talking about earlier was one of the sterilizer manufacturers, and I found out on the MOD database, because we monitor that, there was a malfunction caused by probably the sterilant going through the equipment, and it ate away at some of the plumbing. And of course, that caused a leak. So it's just one example of what can happen. I mean, I think we all have experienced in our lives things that have failed that weren't supposed to. But with this, we're talking about a chemical that's designed to kill all life. And these frontline sterilization technicians are potentially sticking their head in that sterilizer multiple times a day. That's why we're so concerned, and there's so much data to back that up, that it could cause irreparable harm.
It's really interesting, because I was going to ask you, like, how do we know that there's a risk there? And one thing that occurred to me while you were talking about that was, I got to think that the age of the equipment is going to play some sort of a part in this, even with preventive maintenance. Do you know if that's true or not?
Oh, I absolutely do. Sure. I mean, this is in the sales pits, so I don't want to, make it sound like that, but we're in many hundreds of hospitals now. And the interesting thing is the more we monitor, the more we find leaks. It makes perfect sense, right? Then, of course, oftentimes you do see more leakage of older equipment, of course. I mean, it's just like anything else. Things break down. Preventative maintenance is great. A lot of our customers actually use our equipment to determine when they need preventive maintenance, because they develop work practices using the monitors. For instance, they will open the sterilizer door and we instruct them to step back a few feet and look at the monitor. And if the monitor is showing a reading, don't reach in and take something out, because if you do, you're going to be inhaling that toxic chemical. Wait until it goes back down to zero. And what a lot of our customers find is that maybe at the beginning, there's nothing when they open the door. And then after a bit of time, a little bit, and then a little bit more. And after a period of time, it seems like, well, gosh, now we're up at 3 to 4 parts per million or 6 parts per million. If they don't have a monitor that's detecting that, they're going right ahead and sticking their head in there and pulling these things out multiple times a day. And the potential for repeated exposure is at that point, of course, very high.
The other thing that kind of stands out to me with that is the whole idea of preventive maintenance is to do it preventively, not to wait until it's an issue. And I have to think that over time, as you were just describing, that leak gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. And a lot of times preventive maintenance is something that is on a time schedule, but that's really arbitrary. I mean, you even see that in stainless steel instrument repair. A lot of times people will put their sets on a time-related rotation instead of on a usage based rotation. And it would be the same thing, I would think, in this scenario with the low temp sterilant units, is that you have one that may be used much more often in one setting than it might be used in another one. And yet the schedule may be, yes, once a year or every 6 months, when really you would want some empirical data to tell you when to do that. And it might be usage on the unit, but in this case, why not when the unit is beginning to leak and early on before that parts per million and that exposure limit starts to go above a threat threshold? That makes a lot of sense to me. Do you see that they all slowly leak on a certain sort of time scale, or does every unit give you a different reading on when and how much it begins to leak?
Again, a great question, and those are questions that we ponder all the time. Part of the issue that we have is that this information and data does not belong to us. So the hospital has to share that information. And quite frankly, they don't always want to do that. They're reticent about sharing exposure data with us. Some do, but again, it's their data. They own the data. We actually have talked to some potential partners about doing a long-term study, a blind study, because we get the sensors back and that information could be in the sensors. And then we could do a blind study to see what the whole market is doing. The VA system would be a great one because we're in so many VA hospitals. By the way, we're in so many VA hospitals because they're federal and they will not, they pay it, let me say it this way, they pay attention to federal regulations, maybe more than a public hospital would. Your question earlier about the maintenance of equipment and what the interval should be, that's a very astute observation, Justin, and it ties into what I was saying earlier about the cycles. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it only makes sense, doesn't it, that the more something is running, the faster it's going to wear out. The more you use it, busy hospital.
Like the tires on your car, right, David? If you drive 30,000 miles a year and you've got 50,000 mile tires, you know it's going to take not quite 2 years. But if you only drive it 10,000 miles a year, then it's going to take longer.
And, you know, there's differences between types of sterilizers. We've been talking about hydrogen peroxide now for most of the time, but I want to say one more thing about that, and I'd like to get into parasitic acid, glyceraldehyde, those types of things. Hydrogen peroxide, I think all your listeners know that there's two different technologies, right? There's the vapor phase hydrogen peroxide, and then there's the hydrogen peroxide gas plasma. You wouldn't believe how long it took people to really realize that the stuff is still gas. I remember years ago calling people and saying, hey, are you guys still using ethylene oxide? And they go, oh, no, we don't use gas anymore. I mean, I got that 1,000 times. We don't use gas anymore. Oh, really? What are you using now? We're using hydrogen peroxide. So they really just didn't even realize that this is a gaseous hydrogen peroxide. It goes back to education. It goes back to awareness of what you're working with. So the two different technologies, one is the plasma. A lot of people don't understand what the plasma is for and what it does. It really has very minimal effect on the actual sterilization assurance of the product. What the plasma does is break down the hydrogen peroxide at the end of the cycle. So when you open the door, the hydrogen peroxide is much less. Well, the other hydrogen peroxide sterilizer is vapor phase hydrogen peroxide. It doesn't have a plasma to break down any residual hydrogen peroxide at the end of the cycle. Therefore, you can have a much higher residual exposure when you open the door. Think about the third technology that's out there that I hadn't mentioned. It's ozone. The sterilization process, once again, isn't ozone. It's hydrogen peroxide. Once again, the ozone is really used to break down the hydrogen peroxide at the end of the cycle. I think there's a general lack of awareness that this is a gas, that it is extremely concentrated and very dangerous. Certain types of products may be designed in different ways and result in potentially higher exposure.
David, you just mentioned PAA, also known as parasitic acid. I wonder how similar that conversation is with hydrogen peroxide in exposure.
I'm glad you asked, because parasitic acid is really kind of under the spotlight right now. California OSHA is actually proposing a new exposure limit for PAA, and it's because the biocide. Bio means life. Side means kill. It's used in healthcare to sterilize instruments, and it's used in the food and beverage industry for foodborne illnesses. It's literally sprayed on every chicken that you eat. But the occupational exposure limit came out 2 or 3 years ago from the American Conference of Governmental Industrial Hygienists. And from there, it's now evolved into OSHA. OSHA generally adopts exposure limits from ACGIH. Comparatively, parasitic acid is actually hydrogen peroxide and acetic acid mixed. And when you mix the two, it creates a much stronger biocide than just hydrogen peroxide. So when you put those two together, and it's a very poignant smell, the good news is that you can smell it. The bad news is if you can smell it, you probably overexposed. And history repeats itself, because that's how the exposure limits for ethylene oxide were promulgated, much lower than they were previously. In the mid-80s, ethylene oxide was 50 parts per million, if you believe it. In about 84, 85, it went from 50 parts per million exposure limit down to 1 part per million over 8 hours, an average exposure over 8 hours. Then the healthcare employee union in California sued OSHA for a short-term exposure limit and won. So that's how the 5 part per million ethylene oxide exposure limit came about. Now, 40 years later, they're finding that parasitic acid, by the way, something that replaced glutaraldehyde for the same reason, because it was a sensitizer, it caused occupational asthma, and on and on and on. In fact, there's just a report that came out recently in the last month that shows that parasitic acid causes occupational asthmas. So here we go again. You know, we went from glutaraldehyde to PAA before even knowing that it was going to cause harm. And then that's up to the people to determine over time if it's safe or not, which is really kind of backwards. They don't do that in Europe. They make sure it's safe before they put it in the market. This country, unfortunately, goes into the market first, and then it's determined whether it's safe or not.
Goodness, hearing all these numbers and all these acronyms can really be frightening, David. So as a sterile processing leader, what should I do to protect myself, to protect my frontline staff from exposure to these dangerous chemicals?
Well, Bob, it really just starts with education. You and I, and really the sterile processing community as a whole, there should be a lot more education. The Hazard Communication Standard is a federal mandated law, a federal law, that anybody working with chemicals should absolutely know what they're working with, be educated on it. And right in the body of that hazard communication standard, it requires employers to tell employees how they can detect when a leak occurs. It's a federal law. It's very frustrating to us, because actually in 2015, when the HAZCOM standard was updated, I went throughout the country and spoke at a lot of Isham state meetings on the new hazard communication standard. And the first thing I did was ask how many people had been, you know, educated about the chemicals they worked with. Very few hands went up. And then I went on to tell them what's in the standard. I didn't teach the standard. I just said, well, these are the things that you need to be in the standard, one of which is an emergency evacuation or emergency plan. It's, of course, the SDSs, the safety data sheets. It's a plan inventorying all the chemicals and so on and so forth. So that education, I thought, was going to go a long way to help. Part of that is explicitly the employer, and OSHA says the employer must provide a safe work environment. And then HAZCOM, of course, says that they need to tell employees how they can determine when there's a leak. Well, in my view, how else do you do that without monitoring the equipment? To answer your question, I know I kind of went a long way around the barn there, Bob, but it's education. I'm very pleased to be partnering with Beyond Clean to provide that education in the form of CE credits and all that, because it's such a needed thing for folks to understand and make decisions for themselves. They need to then, once they're educated, say, look, to their managers and the managers to the leadership in the hospitals. And my experience, Bob, has been when they do that, they get it. They get monitoring. And here's the last thing I want to say about this. We're not talking about a lot of money here. We're really not. We're talking about a small percentage of what you would pay for a sterilizer. I like to say hospitals spend more on coffee a month than something that, like this, that's going to protect their workers from these types of, you know, health risks.
As you know, we love education. I think this is a topic Not a lot of people are talking about. Not a lot of people are doing presentations on it. And to be able to offer some CE credits to our listeners and to partner with you in that regard has been, I think, a good thing for both organizations as we work together. So, David, I just can't thank you enough for continuing to champion employee safety and for partnering and coming on with Beyond Clean and lending your expertise and sharing it with our audience.
Well, thank you, guys. It's been a real pleasure.
That was David Hilliker, president and CEO of ChemDAC, Inc. And Bob, I know we've spoken to David in the past, but something that we touched on at the very end of the interview, which I think is so critical, was that we played a part in increasing awareness with David's first interview. But since then, there's been a lot more push towards education, and not education just from the Beyond Clean side, but from ChemDAC's side as well. And so the more that I think frontline technicians and managers, and hopefully even the senior level CEOs, the peri-op directors, as our audience continues to expand and grow, that more people will understand the potential risks and that it's a small, small price to pay to be able to monitor for employee safety. And so this was a great interview once again, and David's really passionate about this topic.
Yeah, he sure is. It's really good to hear him talk about this stuff and hear how knowledgeable he is. In the same breath, I said it during the interview, it's frightening to think about all of the chemicals, sterilants, and everything that are so dangerous that the staff are around all of the time. And when you look around, there's just not that many facilities that are truly monitoring all of this stuff. And it's really frightening to think about the impact it can have on the staff.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. And it's just something that, as he mentioned, there's still hundreds of hospitals that are doing this monitoring, but there's many more hospitals in this country, and never mind the outpatient clinics and settings that are using these sterilization methods as well. So that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd certainly appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Bob and myself, thank you for listening to this week's edition of Beyond Clean.